This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Mike Shope.
On who and what was thrown at that gentleman, and that gentleman has been ejected, but it was an ugly, ugly sight. I can't circle. I don't have my telestrator today, but here comes a pizza. See it? Oh, jeez.
Highly unnecessary.
And the Bulldog.
Guy with the Patriots jacket, and of course, he's been asked to leave the ball game for ruining a good piece of pizza. So, let's get beer all over him. And here comes...
On WGR.
That was an awful sight here at Fenway, and that is not tolerated in this ballpark. He has been ejected and never again allowed to buy pizza.
Sports Radio 550.
That is one of my all-time favorite broadcast duos, non-Buffalo region. Don Orsillo and Jerry Remy on the Red Sox broadcast on NESN quite a few years ago now. Orsillo's moved on. He's in San Diego now. Remy is still there. I don't think he's working as heavy a schedule as he used to, but I used to watch, I don't know, how many is too many? 100 Red Sox games a year? I mean, I was in, Joe. I had the extra innings package, and like I just, every night, get home, turn on the TV, watch the Red Sox, and you know, maybe not all the way to the end every night or whatever, but I was between 7:30 and 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, every night that they played, I was there. I mean, I was always there. And those two were a part of it. Like they were just fun. They were fun to listen to do a baseball game. Baseball really lends itself to that. I missed that. I watched a little of the Red Sox, I think, on Saturday afternoon this past weekend, and heard Remy, and it was nice to hear him. It's Dave O'Brien, I think, is the guy doing the play-by-play now, and he's fine, but Orsillo and Remy just were so good together. Loved it. Anyway, glad to have you with us here on this sunny, hot April Thursday, 80 degrees. Joe is worried about his 100 degree bet he has with me already, and it's only April 8th. I tell you, I love it. I don't know, you being worried about it doesn't really mean it's going to happen, but, you know.
I mean, not a good sign if it's already April 8th and it's 81. Right. So.
Indeed. Well, we've got lines open. You want to get in on anything we've talked about so far today? It's been a couple of different things. The Sabres and the goaltending situation, which we'll get back to here in a moment. Spend some time during the last half hour or so talking about Josh Allen and his potential contract extension and what that will do to sort of change the expectations around him and the team. That's going to be something we're all going to have to be adjusting to. You know, we went through the winter. I've said it this way many times, like December was felt like a victory lap, basically, like from, and not the entire month, but still, like they clinched the division on the 19th, and then they you know, Monday Night Football with the Patriots, and then that Miami game. It felt like a victory lap, and what this show became then was just people blown away and moved by emotion that the Bills are good. They're a contender. They could do this. Like, it was crazy us sort of all experiencing that in real time and going through it together. You don't get to do that again next year. Like, it'll be fun when the Bills, if the Bills are indeed a Super Bowl contender again next, you know, November, December, January. But it will not be the same. Like, you don't get to have that first time people calling and crying. Like, you don't get to do it. It all changes. Once you're expected to be good and you are good, the whole thing, emotionally, it just changes. So Allen's contract will end up being a big part of that eventually.
I thought about that even for this upcoming year, because I don't have much experience with this at all, but I thought about, like, is next year going to feel like the 07 Sabres, where the whole year was just, all right, let's get to the playoffs. Let's get to Ottawa.
Yeah.
And, like, next year for the Bills, I don't know. We'll see. Once the season shows up, maybe I'll think differently. But as I stand here today, I'm like, next year is just get me to Kansas City. Get me to the playoffs.
Yeah. Be careful. You've been with us long enough. I don't know that I've necessarily said this before. I'm sure it's come up. You might have been answering the phone or putting out a fire or who knows, posting something on Twitter when I've made the point. But you touched a nerve just now by referencing the 07 Sabres. That is my least favorite great sports season of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. Because I did exactly what you just described, you feeling tempted or thinking you might be tempted to do with the Bills next year. Just get me to Kansas City. Get me past that. Like, that's the end game. The 07 Sabres to me they came off of a conference finals loss to Carolina, of course, the previous year. That season begins. They're great. It begins with like a 10-game winning streak, and it's really great. And they win the President's Trophy, and I don't feel like I enjoyed it at all, because the whole year, I think if you could go back and into the archives and find shows, you will find me talking about Anaheim.
Yep.
They had been to the conference final as well the previous year. I think they lost to Edmonton in the conference final, if I remember correctly. Like, they had, the young guys were coming there. That was Getzlaff and Perry, and Dustin Penner was a part of that. And they all had crazy weird numbers because they were so young. And then the next year, I think it was Brian Burke, like, made them get quote-unquote real numbers because they're now staple guys on the team. And I thought they looked like the powerhouse in the West. They ended up winning the Cup. And this isn't revisionist history. I thought they were the team to beat. And all year I was, how are the Sabres going to match up with Anaheim? How are they going to beat Anaheim, right? Pronger and Niedermeyer and, like, this team that's really big and tough and mean, but also skilled and just really talented. I did not enjoy a season in which the Sabres were the best team all regular season. I didn't enjoy it, as I just completely lost perspective on it. And, you know, it turns out the Sabres made it to the conference final again, but they lost, and I never got to see Anaheim play the Sabres in the Stanley Cup final, and the price I paid was I didn't enjoy a great season of hockey. So I've tried to remember that, and I'll try to remember that when we're getting ready for this Bills season, Joe. Maybe I'll be a good person to be here to remind you, not to just think about how do I beat the Chiefs in January.
Yeah,
you know, because you don't get to pick up where you left off. It's not how it works. But even if you do, you're sacrificing enjoying the whole season by being obsessed with what the end is going to look like. And you should never, in anything, just worry about what the end is going to look like, because getting there is, you know, I mean, it's very hokey, and I sound like a Hallmark card now, but
yep,
it's important to enjoy the day-to-day and the games, because, you know, it's what gets you through the time. And if you obsess about the end and the end doesn't meet the criteria you've established, it sucks all the more. And I was so bitterly disappointed that they didn't make it. And then, you know, once I got some perspective, I realized I had made a mistake that I hope I never make again.
Yeah, and the start of that year definitely would have played into that, because it made the rest of the year, you know, like, once it's comfortable that, like, okay, they're going to make it all year, they're at the top of the standings, I don't really have to worry about other things happening in the regular season. If something similar happens to the Bills, it might just be natural. Like, if they start 4-5-0 to start the year, and the rest of the AFC East is just garbage, and, like, we know that they're going to win the division. This kind of happened last year on a lesser scale in, like, that last, like you mentioned, December. It was kind of cruise control. And me thinking in here every day about the Bills with games left, for me was mostly like, all right, how do I compare to the Chiefs? because right. if I'm going to get to where I want to be, I'm going to end up having to play them. There were other conversations, like who do we want to play in the first round and such, but that I think that same effect will take form this year, depending on how they start the year.
And maybe it could start earlier. Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, but we still, you know, what we'll be missing is the novelty of it, right? That's where I started here, right? We got to December and it was just, you know, I'm doing Sunday morning shows with you and your brother, you know, because it's just like everyone just wants to be a part of it, and I just keep drinking from this fountain that is nonstop emotional flow. Just it's so much fun to be in it, and that will not be there. Like, it'll be fun, it'll be exciting, but the first time, oh my God, I can't believe it, all this time I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and here we are, thank you guys for getting me through this and all that, like, that's once in a generation. You know, you got to go through another drought to do that again, and who wants any of that? I don't want to do that again. I'm too old for that. I'm not going to make it through another drought. The Sabres better get it together soon, because I can't keep going. But you get the point, right? I mean, you can't manufacture that. So, you know, the focus will be different, and it's just going to feel different. It always does. When you're established as good, even if you try to guard against it, there is some level of, like, well, yeah, I'm not excited by that. Of course they did that, you know? Like, I don't know, maybe even if they are fortunate enough again to just smack New England around, it's never going to feel like it did on that Monday night, the 28th of December, when they did that to them on Monday Night Football. It's just not. You can't replicate that kind of cleansing. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the day after that game, I came on the air and I was crying because I was so emotional about it. You know, you don't, and maybe it's good that we don't get to go through that again, because you just can't. It's just not how it works. 803-0550 is the number you want to get in. I don't know, that just sort of came out of nowhere. But Joe reminded me of it talking about the 07 Sabres. So, anyway, lots to talk about, here on with the trade deadline coming up on Monday, and lines are open at 803-0550, and let's do that. It's been done. We've taken calls. Ron is up first this segment. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Hey guys, hope you guys are doing well. You know, I
thanks you too.
I've been saying for a couple of weeks, and I don't know if it's a popular opinion or not, but we've been drafting so high the last few years. I wonder what we could get by trading away our first pick, whether it's the first, second, or third overall. Maybe get a player that's established in the league, that's a good player, like a really good player, so we don't have to wait 3 years down the road and for it to even work. I mean, you know, Middlestat's proven if you wait long enough, but still he's not great, but he's obviously starting to work out. But what would you think about trading that pick, or maybe if you trade Hall for a first and Monster, you know, you start just trading back the picks you get away for a real established player? And that's why I hear what you guys think about, so I'll listen. Be blessed, guys.
Okay, Ron, thanks. I would definitely be interested in exploring it. I'm not sure how feasible it is this year. Again, like we've heard a little bit, and I'm sure we'll get more into it as we get, you know, through the season and start, you know, heading towards the summer and draft season. But the top of the draft is not this year thought to be just can't miss, gotta have this guy type draft. And that's not to say the picks don't have value, but I think it might be harder this year to imagine a scenario where a team is so flush with, what are we talking about, 23, 24-year-old players that they go, you know what, I really like Luke Hughes at the top of the draft, or Owen Power, or whomever, right? I really like the center from Michigan. So I'm going to trade you a 23, 24-year-old player who's already established as a good player in the NHL. I'm going to make that trade and because I got to have this pick. I think that's very hard. It's a very hard trade to pull off, I think, this year, because teams haven't had as much opportunity to fall in love with these guys in person, and I just don't know you know, how realistic it is any year, but especially this year, I think you're going to have a really hard time. Like, if you were sitting on the first pick last year, and everyone knows Alexis Lafreniere is going to show up and he's going to be counted on eventually. I know it's not happening this year from a goal total standpoint, but this is a 40-goal scorer. Pencil him in on your top line and, you know, go. If you wanted to trade that for, you know, some 23-year-old established version of that, maybe you could have pulled that off. I think you still might have been nuts because you're giving up a rookie contract on a guy that probably by year two or three is going to be producing and probably outperforming his contract maybe by a lot, but maybe you could have done it. In a year like this, I think it's going to be really hard. I don't think there is not that guy at the top that I think is going to be lucrative enough for a team to give up an established asset for the opportunity to have your pick. That's how I see it right now. So I think that might be tough. It's a fine idea, you know. I mean, if you could make it work, I'm open to it. I'm even open to it if somebody, you know, if some team finds the Sabres first pick this year of great value by Monday and wants to make that trade, I think I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know that it's realistic to expect that to happen because of what I just said.
But the one team I've thought about throughout the last minute or two here is the Flames, because for over a year, I feel like they could have blown it all up. And they might not do it, but they still could. Like, Goudreau's name's been in and out of trade rumors for a while. And, like, does that rate enough as a player for that pick? He's only got 1 year left on his contract. But also, the idea itself, even if the guy at the top of this draft isn't supposed to be this generational talent, you made the point about the rookie deal. Like, I'd rather have whoever I'm getting at the top of this draft on a rookie deal than 28-year-old Johnny Gaudreau with 1 year left. Because just where this team is, I don't know. I don't love the idea of them going after a guy that's going to help them win right now, because I don't think they're going to win right now, almost regardless of who they bring in.
Yeah. Yeah, the Flames probably are going to do something. Like you said it, right? It's been talked about for a while. They've got a core that, you know, was really highly thought of, and it's not working. They're not going to make the playoffs. And so be curious to see what they end up doing. But, yeah, I think from there, they might love the idea of trading Johnny Gaudreau to the Sabres for a first-round pick.
Especially this year's, which would be top three.
Right. They might really like that. I don't know, like you just said, like, then I got to re-sign that guy, and I don't know. Am I just trading for another version of what I've already got? A star who has been a part of a core that hasn't worked. I'm not sure that sounds like a really good idea. His age would worry me. Like, there's a lot of reasons to not do it. He's older than even, like I said, 23, 24, right? Like, that would be the wheelhouse. I think a team like Calgary, I think, would make that trade. I don't want to make that trade.
Yeah.
A younger guy, I don't think a team wants to give up, especially in this year's draft.
Right. Like, they're not trading Matthew Tkachuk for that pick. He's 23. He fits that profile. And if I'm Calgary, like, that's when the breaking point comes, because this is all hypothetical. But if I'm Calgary, like, yeah, I'll trade Johnny Gaudreau for a top three pick. And the Sabres like, okay, well, we want to do it for Tkachuk. And the Flames say, well, no. And then that's the end of that.
That's the end of that. Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Ron. Again, appreciated going through the exercise here anyway. 803-0550 is the number. We'll take a time out here. Brian Koziel will join us next to tell us what's been going on in round one of the Masters. We've got our majors bet, and I'm not looking good already in that. But, you know, it's early. A lot of my guys are still on the course, Joe.
They're just not doing well.
Well, they're way, way over par, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, Brian Koziel up next. I am the Bulldog along with Sneaky Joe, and this is WGR. Oh, this music can mean only one thing. We have a Metallica concert announcement to make. No, that can't be right. I'm sorry. I was on the wrong page of the. What would Mike? Hang on. I got. Let me find. Let me Let me find it here. Oh, Brian Colziel is on the Western Hotline with us to talk about the Masters. That's what that music means. Silly, silly, silly of me. After all these years, you'd think I would have this stuff down. Hi, Brian. How are you today, bud?
We're good. It is absolutely perfect out. You should. I hope you're doing your show from outside from your porch today.
I think it would. I've thought about it in the past, definitely. I think it's. I live on a corner of a busy street. I think it just could potentially be too loud. I've got the roving gangs of young dudes on ATVs and dirt bikes that go by doing wheelies on a day like today. They go by maybe 5-6 times. It would be tough. I mean, up here, all I got to really do is worry about if Fred sees a squirrel, and I'm okay. But outside, I think, would be a little tricky. So, but nice idea. You know, maybe if I ever get to go to Canada again, that'll be I'll do that from like out in the middle of the lake or something. I think I got a battery pack for this Comrex, and I can make it happen.
That's a good idea. I mean, it's about as peaceful as you could be if you just take the boat out of, you know, a few miles out, boom, right in the middle of the lake, just set up camp right there and do the show.
Yep. So how's round one going? Well, I think for you, from a gambling perspective, round one's going pretty well for you and Mike. I feel like I'm already buried, Brian.
Yeah, it was a rough, I think, first day for Team Bulldog. I don't know. Like, your bigger names. Now, Spieth is still playing, and I still think I still like his chances. But Dustin Johnson played well all day and then kind of threw it away a little on the last hole when he doubled. Now, he's still plus two, so it's not terrible, but DeChambeau seems like he's done. McIlroy is a mess. He's all spraying. He hit his dad today. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I didn't see it,
dad.
But I read about it.
So he's on the front nine. He sprayed his drive into the pine trees, so he's in the needles, like we see there, like quite a bit. So his dad is walking along, one of the, you know, obviously smaller spectators, but there's still some there right now. And he fires one up toward the green, and he missed it. As soon as he hit it, he yells, "Four right!" And it took one bounce and drilled his dad in the, like, lower back, kind of the thigh area. And they had the microphone on him and his caddy. And he goes, "I think I just drilled dad." And he kind of was like saying it in a, you know, a comical way. Yep. His round, though, McIlroy, it's too bad. He's so fun to watch when he's in contention. But he has been incapable of, in the last few years, of like avoiding just blow up holes and blow up rounds. He will have great rounds. Now, we might be sitting here Sunday, and he might be a few off the lead, and we'd be saying, "Oh my, if he just would have not had these terrible holes in round one." He seems to do that quite a bit. But, I mean, that's a pretty funny moment. You got your dad out there following you, and you drill him. At least it went on one bounce and took a little of the blow away.
Right. It wasn't like in flight or anything like that. It definitely would have been worse, I think, if that had happened. Yeah, you know. I don't know. You didn't really. You're one of the nicest guys ever. So you didn't tear my picks apart. But like Rory, I don't know. Maybe I should have seen Rory coming, because what you say is right. And didn't he just recently, like, he got a lot of credit for being honest, but talk about how he tried to add too much power because of DeChambeau and like. I don't know, that kind of thing. I probably should have taken that into account, that maybe he's not exactly where he needs to be contending for a Masters title.
Yeah, he said, watching DeChambeau do what he did at the U.S. Open last year, that he went and tried to gain more clubhead speed with his swing, and he has, on the record, admitted in interviews that he said it really has kind of messed him up, that he knows that ultimately to maybe gain more distance, that this is what he needs to do. But he said his accuracy and his timing is just off. He's like, "Look, I've had a swing that I've been trying to perfect over the last decade. And now all of a sudden I'm trying to like change it in terms of the speed." And I mean, you know, these guys, they're off by like a quarter of an inch or a quarter of a second on something. And they know it. I mean, the fact that if he's trying to make a major swing change, for a guy that hasn't been the most accurate off the tee with the driver in his career anyway, that's probably a similarity to Tiger's career, too. I mean, Tiger was never Mr. Down the Middle Every Hole sort of guy. But Rory, has always had the talent to be able to overcome that from time to time. But it seems like these last few years, part of the reason he can't win is that the blow-up holes he's just not able to overcome. He'll fire a double and a triple bogey once around in these like major tournaments, and it seems to set him back. And obviously, it bit him again here today. So your point being, yes, maybe we did see this coming, that he was going to be all over the place because he's not quite confident with his driver right now.
Right. Brian Koziel, host of Tee to Green and our Sabres pre- and post-game coverage on the Western Hotline with us, reviewing round one of the Masters so far anyway. It's still going on. It'll be going on into past supper time here. I guess it already is kind of supper time for some people, whatever. I've been eating dinner at 8 o'clock for 25 years because of this job, so what do I know? So how much of a surprise is DeChambeau's day, Brian? And for someone like me and maybe anyone else who's been out all day, like I haven't had a chance to really sit with the tournament much at all yet. Has he been trying to just bomb it and it's not working out? Like what has his day been like? Why is he plus five?
Definitely because of inaccuracy. He has found himself overshooting greens. He's found some of his tee shots be in the trees. It's definitely all because of his lack of accuracy right now. I think he has a plan, and I want to give him credit. He's as smart as any guy out there. Like, I'm sure he has a plan that he's come up with to say, like, look, this is how I can take advantage of my length. This is how I think I can take advantage of the course, whether it's taking this angle or, you know, this way in. But then at some point you still have to execute the shot, and he's not executing the shot in any way. And his short game has been getting better. Part of his improvement and his rise to being a real star on the PGA Tour is that his short game in putting, which never was great, has now gotten himself to be, I would say, I'd label it at least above average among PGA Tour players. And you have to putt well here, too. And he's not putting himself in good spots at all. And even some of the makeable putts that he's had to maybe save a par, he hasn't made them. So a rough first day for him, but a lot of it to me is he's constantly scrambling. So he's got to get his accuracy issue straightened out if he's going to get back in it.
How about the guys at the top? Like, Rose is there. Just what do you make of the top? And can that's so far playing well, you think, hang around and be a real threat going in towards the weekend?
Yeah, Rose just looks locked in. Speaking of, we just mentioned McIlroy and DeChambeau having accuracy issues. Rose is like striping everything. He just looks perfect. He has not missed rarely any greens at all. So staying out of trouble has definitely been something for him. I did not see much of Matsuyama other than a few highlights, so I guess I wouldn't have the best thing to say on him. Brian Harman, a player who's thrown his name in here and there at majors, he has said on the record, throwing his name in the mix with like Mickelson and Watson, that he says a left-hander playing Augusta National, he thinks they have a huge advantage because there's so many holes that go right to left. So for a lot of right-handed players, including probably many listening, the natural ball flight for a lot of us is to hit it left to right, or when you're really hitting it bad, a slice. The pros like to call that a controlled cut, right? That's the fancy term.
Right, sure. But, yeah. I'm going to try that the next time I play.
That's right. Tell everybody I'm hitting a controlled cut. It makes it sound much better when you slice it to the next fairway over to the right.
Right.
But for
right.
Harman being the lefty, for the pros hitting what they do, you know, being serious about it, to hitting a controlled cut, it's a more high percentage shot than a draw. So for them, it also lands softer in the fairway, too, because of that. So the lefties themselves feel like they have an advantage. And I think that's why we've seen Mickelson win it so many times. We've seen Watson win it twice. We've seen even a guy like Mike Weir, who kind of came out of nowhere, win it. The lefties, I think, off the tee have a big advantage, and Harman had brought that up after his round today. So maybe not a huge surprise that he's in it. And Mickelson's playing okay. He's I think, at one over the last I checked. So he could be around. I'm still intrigued to watch Spieth here the rest of the way. He's the last group out today. He was the last group. So he'll be on probably up until 7 o'clock, 7:30, whenever they close the round for the days. But I still think he's got the right game, and he's got his confidence back. And he's kind of hanging right around that even par mark. So I think he'll still be the guy to watch here the rest of the day. And for your team, Bulldog, he's definitely, I still think, your best chance.
He is my leader, although, you know, DJ's only one back of that, and I think someone else that's on my team is in that same range too. Maybe Justin Thomas, I think, might be two over as well. But I don't know if any of them have hit trees like Spieth did earlier, but I guess he recovered from that. I mean, he's still only – he took a 7 on 9, right? But he still managed to be only one over. So, you know, hopefully
– And tomorrow they're thinking that there could be rain. So all the difficulty that we're seeing with these greens, and as you've maybe noticed if you've seen any of it, the greens definitely look a little more browner than they normally would in April. I think there was a conscious effort to not have the winning score be 20 under like Dustin Johnson had in November when he broke the Masters record for the lowest score ever. So I think they were ready to make it fast and firm. I know Phil Mickelson said, he goes, over the last few years that it hasn't been firm enough for his liking. He said, us experienced guys, like, we know where to hit it on these greens, but he goes, it doesn't matter because they've made it softer. So these young guys come in, they're just throwing it at pins, and this is how they're making birdies. So Mickelson actually was almost like welcoming it being lightning fast in the green because he thought then his experience could really help. So I think that'll be maybe something to watch for tomorrow. Does it rain? Does it soften it up? Maybe does it make it a little easier for guys to really go at pins? And then if that ends up being the case, then I think that allows guys to maybe make a higher jump up the leaderboard. If it still plays like this, probably the most movement you're going to see in the leaderboard is guys going down when they, you know, implode and have some bad holes.
Yep. Right. Well, that's good for me then. I should pray for rain then, because my entire team needs to come back. So that's good to know. Do you have any idea what the weather is supposed to be on the weekend?
I think the biggest threat of rain is tomorrow. A little, I think they said in the 60 to 70% range, a little less on Saturday in terms of rain, and then Sunday is supposed to be fine again.
All right. Good, Brian. If this works for you, we'll do this again, same bat time, same bat channel, if that's cool with you, tomorrow.
Sounds good. And then we'll talk to you in about an hour from the arena.
Right. Yes, of course. Yes.
Yes.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Okay, you got it, Chris. Have a great day.
That is Brian Koziel on the Western Hotline with us, reviewing round one of the Masters. He's the host of Tee to Green, special two-hour Masters show coming up on Saturday from 7 to 9 a.m. So make sure and tune in for that. And, of course, you know, we want you to listen to the Sabres game, too, and you'll hear Brian in a little while as we get you ready for the Sabres and the Devils tonight. Pre-game is just about 15 minutes away here on WGR.
Myers cruises in his home zone. Leaves it back there to Butler. 32 seconds to go in regulation. The fans are rocking and rolling here at HSBC Arena.
Both teams want the tie. Look at the forecheck.
They're doing us a favor.
Myers just hanging on to the puck. He says, come and get me, come and get me. And nobody wants to. Now Hartnell does, and Myers ducks it off into the corner. 10 seconds to go. Commonville's got it at center. Yo, Stanley Cup playoffs. Here come the Buffalo Sabres.
That is April 8th, 2011. Sneaky Joe pulling on the heartstrings. I don't know. I feel emotional hearing that and thinking about it. Do people get mad when you're hearing it being reminded? I don't know. Everybody's different. Man, that was – you know, I remember there's a lot. That night, I mean, of course, it culminated with the Sabres clinching a playoff spot. That was a tie. They ended up winning the game in overtime anyway on, if I remember correctly, a Nathan Gerby spinorama-type goal, or was that in regulation to tie it?
The Gerby goal is in regulation to tie it. And then Vanek scores a great goal in overtime. Like, chips it by...
Okay.
It wasn't Pronger. They chips it by one of the Flyers' defensemen, and then he scores on a breakaway to end it.
Okay. Well, the game... Before the game, there was a parade of... Like, everybody was invited back. Right? They introduced the history of the Buffalo Sabres. It's just everyone. There was no talk about crests being wrong and cheap knockoff jerseys or anything that night. It was a full-on party. And I remember sitting on the concourse with Mike. In those days, we did our shows and ultimately the Sabres pregame shows from a spot just at the top of the escalators in the atrium is where we worked, right? So it's, you know, people were there early. They were told to get there early because there's going to be this parade of, you know, all the former players are going to be introduced. It's going to be this amazing emotional night, right? This is, you know, the end of the season that the Pegulas bought the team. So emotions are running high. There's a crowd of, it's as crowded as it's ever been at that hour, like leading up to face-off. All around us just waiting because the bowl wasn't open yet, but the atrium was. So everyone was just sort of there, right? And I remember saying to Mike, we're finally past July 1st of 2007. Like this is the moment. Tonight is the night. You know, they got a chance to clinch a playoff spot. Look at this crowd. They're going to introduce the entire organization, like all the players, past players. It's going to be just this amazing emotional night. We're riding high. The Pegulas own the team. Just what an experience. And sitting there, I felt like finally this organization is going to get past Jury and Briere leaving on the same day. And, you know, they made the playoffs, and they got to overtime of Game 6 at home, and – wait for it. Ville Leino scored to win Game 6 for the Flyers and stave off elimination. And the Sabres went to Philly and just got boat raced in Game 7. And they have not been back to the playoffs since. But, boy, it's just reminding me of sitting there on a, you know, beautiful, sunny late afternoon, early evening, heading for a hockey game, being in the atrium, all those fans around and feeling that emotion and like pronouncing, we're finally able to put the Briere and Drury leaving in the ground. Like, we're done. And of course, you know, we know now, right? They lose that series and they have not been back to the postseason since. And all of the ghosts are still around now, right? Drury, Briere, all of it. It's all still haunting us. But boy, at that time, 10 years ago tonight, man, it felt like anything was possible with that organization. And we'll see if we can get back there again. I mean, holy cow. You got to hope, right? I mean, in between like the great 06-07 seasons and that 2010-2011, because 2010 they won the division. There were a couple of bleak years, and then, of course, since 2011, there's been nothing but desolation. And, you just got to hope at some point we get to relive all that, because it is – I'll never forget that sitting there. I can see it. I can see the people. I can feel the emotion. It was powerful. When they are good and we are energized by it, it's hard to beat. I mean – you know, the Bills, of course, you know, provide that for more people in person than the Sabres. But, man, it's just the best. Hopefully they get back there at some point. We've got a hockey game to get ready for here. Nonetheless, the Sabres are in last place and not contending for anything other than trading off spare parts and free agents to be by Monday at 3 p.m. But they host the Devils tonight, and we will get you ready for it like only we can. Paul Hamilton will join me right after the break here to get us rolling on the Paul William Belt Sabres pregame show. Sabres and Devils coming up at 7. Mike Schoep is away on vacation. Along with Sneaky Joe DiBiase, I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.